One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, podcast listeners. Welcome to Red Men Weekly, the weekly wrap-up show of our amazing Red Men Plus content here at Red Men HQ. Right then, yeah, if you ever listened to this show before, essentially we're going to bring you clips from our best Red Men Plus shows each and every week to give you guys a little taste of those. So yeah, let's crack on straight away then. Let's have a little clip from this week's transfer show. Did you watch England, Chloe?
Yeah.
Sure. And did it whet the appetite for Jude Bellingham? Because the story came from Ben Jacobs shortly after, journalist, and he basically tweeted out the picture of Jordan Henderson as well, didn't he? And said, you know, they celebrated like they were out of weighing, but Bellingham and Henderson's friendship is great. And Liverpool will no doubt use that in their pursuit of Bellingham, and they've done more legwork than most, and they are the front runners alongside Real Madrid. So, yeah, if he's not signing for Liverpool, or he's doing a lot of prick teasing on social media. He's been busy, he's with Trent, he's been everywhere, he's been doing loads of vendors, and they've been everywhere, he's been talking each other up. But the fact remains, forget all that, he is so good, and he's playing so well that obviously there's going to be a ton of clubs in. But were you encouraged with the way of front runners from Ben Jacobs' report? Because I certainly was.
I mean, yeah, it's another report which makes me more excited, but ultimately that means more absolute heartbreak when it does not happen.
Think glass half full, Cole, glass half full.
I know, but I'm not too sure, if we don't get a sale in time, that FSG will spend as much money that we need to spend on Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
But yeah, every time I see him play, I want him more and more each time, and it's getting to a point where you feel like you can't want him anymore, and then you see him on your TV, and you're like, yeah, absolutely, that, but in red, please. And I'll be really happy.
Yeah, he's been absolutely brilliant. He's been one of the standouts of the World Cup. Dan, the point Chloe makes is that often, if we do, I know you run the socials, so you'll see this, anytime we put something out of Bellingham, it's 50-50, it's excitement, and there's lots of, well, FSG aren't going to spend, they're not going to spend the money, they're not going to do this. My reverse would be, why would they bother doing all of this legwork? Because there's clearly been tons, forget about the social media stuff, whatever. Mm. We know for a fact, it's been reported by numerous reputable outlets, and people are putting the legwork in. They've had the conversations with Dortmund, they've probably had it with Bellingham's camp, all that kind of stuff. They know what the price is going to be.
Yeah.
Why would they be doing that if they're just not prepared? It's just, again, there'll be some people out there who go, oh, it's just spin, and they're just doing this to make themselves look good. And again, I don't agree with that, but that'll be a theory that's out there. But that's the thing to me with the cash or whatever. They're not stupid. They know what it's going to cost. It isn't like with Mbappe, they just had an inquiry, found out how much it would cost them. They haven't done that with Bellingham. They know what the money's going to be, and they've still continued, which again, does that give you a bit more confidence that this could be something that happens?
100%, yeah. I mean, first and foremost, he's a wonderful talent and a player that Liverpool need to sign, in my opinion. But yeah, I think there's two schools of thought on the FSG angle to it, because Chloe's point is a valid one in terms of why would FSG, looking to get out, why would they then reinvest a huge chunk of money, which would be 130 or 150 million all told. But on the flip side of that, FSG bought the football club as a distressed asset and got it on the cheap because of that. So they know the value in keeping Liverpool's value high. And if you add Jude Bellingham to the mix, that only increases what they might get in the end. So there is definitely an avenue where they go, oh yeah, it's okay, I know we're on our way out, but any new investors, any new money, there's Jude Bellingham, there's 10, 12 years worth of midfielder. So that just increases what they're going to get in the end game.
It doesn't. This is the thing, isn't it, Chloe, as well, is that there's no, we don't know, FSG have mentioned, because the sale thing does get brought up a lot, and I think it's valid. It could take ages. Yeah. It could be years. No one could buy Liverpool. It could be a small investment. From what we're told, although there's a lot of change happening, the stories where it's business as usual. And I think Jürgen would insist upon that anyway. I don't think Jürgen would sit there and just let things float by, because it could be years. Yeah. We don't want to be in a Mike Ashley situation where he's dead. He just doesn't want to spend any dough because he knows he's selling it, and what's the fucking point? Kind of thing. I don't sense, and I might be wrong, that's happened. I don't think our manager would allow that to happen, given the power he's got. With that being said, then, again, the front-runners thing from Ben Jacobs, the Real Madrid thing looks interesting. Honestly, and it might be complete fallacy, but do you take anything from the social media stuff? The fact that, like, Trent gets interviewed and he was like, no, we're just going out with me, but he's doing it with a really cheeky grin, like a knowing nod and a wink. Like Henderson doing the shaking hands emoji and the fire. Do you take anything from that? Are they dropping hints? Are they breadcrumbs? Or is this just lads who are mates who like each other? Because at some point, I think Dan tweeted out the Jim Carrey. Oh, come on! Stop it! Stop it! If this isn't true, then stop it. You're being mean.
Yeah.
So that, are you taking anything from it all?
I'm trying not to, because ultimately Jude Bellingham's the player that I want. And if it doesn't work out and they've just been busy mates and Trent and Hendo have had absolutely no pull there, I'll be fuming with Liverpool Football Club firstly for not getting him.
Yeah.
But I'll also be fuming at the fact that you've set us up for failure as fans of football. It depends, because you hear so much with transfers. I mean, I keep going back to Sal, who went to Chelsea instead of coming to us. And for months on end, maybe 2 months around, it was, he's defo a Liverpool player, he's a Liverpool player. And then it was like, oh yeah, no, he's not.
The flip side on that though, Chloe, was Liverpool all the way through was saying no.
Yeah.
This was Liverpool were denying that. And all the local journalists were like, we don't know. A lot of that was coming from Spain and other sources.
Yeah.
There's radio silence. If anything, there's nods and winks about Jude Bellingham. Neil Jones has sat here and he's got contacts, and we all know who Neil's contacts are, and he literally said the words, Liverpool want Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it. Yeah. That's the difference. There's clearly they want him. I'm not sure they ever wanted Sal. Turns out he was fucking crap.
He got him moved to Chelsea, didn't it? And it turned out, like you say, he felt
like an angel. It does feel though, Dan, doesn't it? Like, we know they have to want him. Everyone wants him.
Yeah.
I've saw that, again, there's loads of threads to pull on this story. I think it was one of the directors from Dortmund speaking, like, you know, he prefers Liverpool. Yeah. But that was his preference. Like, of all the Premier League clubs I like, he was saying, I like Liverpool, but we're not just going to give Jude Bellingham away. Like, we're not doing anyone favours here. Mm-hmm. The Real Madrid one, I think if he moves to the Premier League, I think he'll join Liverpool, is my guess. Yeah. Would you go along with that?
I tend to agree with that. Yeah.
But Real Madrid's the...
That's the worst part of that tweet. The tweet is absolutely outstanding, and then you get to alongside Real
Madrid. It's very much Hodgson. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly that. And that's the real kick in the teeth right at the end, isn't it? If the character limit would have stopped just before that, I'd have been
even lost. If it was a 1 or 2, you would have read 2.
Two could go. They don't need 2 when I've seen all that. That was a shame, like, because they're obviously, and we've seen it with Tchouaméni as well, there's some of, like, it's recent history. And Real Madrid down the years, how many times have they done this? When they're in for a player, Real Madrid win the race, don't they? More often than not. It's Real Madrid. But I could say, if he comes to the Premier League, and something, whether it's sort of wishful thinking on my behalf, I think he's the sort of player that will want to come to the Premier League. I think he'll want to come and do it because he's English. He obviously was at Birmingham as a youngster. He's going to want to come and conquer the Premier League. I'm certain of it. I just hope he wants to do it now. And then maybe 10, 12 years down the line, that Real Madrid can come then, perhaps.
Suppose, Chloe, that he has been excellent. And I say, I can take England, leave it, whatever. I watched them last night, I did. I watched both games last night, by the way, and the two standout players happened to be Kylian Mbappe, Jude Bellingham, dream on situation. If we are bought by bazillionaires, that's the dream fantasy. But it's a double-edged sword, this, Chloe, is that everyone's seeing how good he is, and it might be whetting the appetite, but it's also, there are clubs who will just... I'm not saying they don't know Jude Bellingham, because everyone knows who he is, of course, but is it nudging things up? Is it nudging the price up for Dortmund? Is there one extra club coming in going, we need to get him? Like, for example, PSG were linked I think it was a French outlet that threw their name in the hat. Having a good World Cup will just elevate you. Not only does it elevate your price, it elevates your standing in world football. And before, Real Madrid fans might be like, oh yeah, this lad from Germany looks all right. They watch him in the World Cup and they're like, fucking go and get him. Yeah. We saw this with James Rodriguez. I always reference back to that one. I said he had a fine career. Everyone knew James Rodriguez. He took the World Cup by storm for Colombia before he had the Bernabeu. And it does feel like this is the type of tournament with the Real Madrid thinking Real Madrid, why is he here? That can just get their fans to go, we want him. And more often than not, their fans are like a spoiled kid. Yeah. You know, if they want someone, it's very, very rare. They don't get their own way. They tend to go and get it. That's the flip side of him playing so, so well in this tournament, because he has been fabulous.
Yeah, no, I wish he was half playing crap, to be honest with you.
not get a game.
Yeah, make sure absolutely no one else is seeing what we see. But I think everyone knew he was brilliant. I just think... I genuinely, when I say this, like, Steven Gerrard won Liverpool Cups on his own, it feels like Jude Bellingham could do that with England at the moment, because he is England's best player at the moment. And he's carrying them. When he picks up that ball, his strength, his power, he's involved in nearly every goal. And it's scary to think that this is a guy that we really want and we need. And yeah, you've got clubs who can just throw money around here, there and everywhere, and big clubs with big names who sadly can beat Liverpool to the punch.
I try and think, Danny, when you reminds me of, I can't quite put my finger on it. At times yesterday, I was thinking he looked like Yaya Toure.
Yeah.
When he was just winning the ball back and just marauding past people. And then the Harry Kane goal, when he delays the pass that extra second, because anyone else would have just whacked it towards Phil Foden. He takes one more man on and then plays it. I was starting to get Yaya, he's obviously not as physically imposing as Yaya, who was a different beast.
But, the beast, yeah.
And then I see bits of him and think, bloody hell, that's a bit Gerrard-esque. And that's a bit, I don't know what he is, but what I do know is that it's really, really enticing. And I just, like I say, I can always take transfers, I can take it or leave it, it is what it is. If you miss out, like, so many I wanted Liverpool to sign, I did, and I was like, okay, sign, that is what it is. This is one that, going back to Chloe's point earlier, this one would sting if it gets away. It feels like having not signed someone in the summer, we knew they had their eye on Bellingham, to miss out now, if you do want to spin it negatively, would be a massive, massive, not only a PR blow, but just like a blow to the football team who need this type of player in their team. There we go, some hot transfer chat for you. Spoiler alert, there's a little bit more of that to come later in this show. But first of all, away from the transfers, what are the big stories of dominating Liverpool? Well, it is, of course, the ownership issues. David Lynch wrote a report earlier in the week about the Saudi-Qatari interest in Liverpool, and straight away we got on the phone to talk to Dave, because we wanted to know more about it, and we're going to share a little clip of that interview with you right now.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the headline of it goes, you know, getting Qatari and the Saudis in there with Liverpool potentially up for sale, it doesn't get much bigger than that, to be perfectly honest. And just talk to me if you don't mind, just sort of where the origins of this story come from.
Yeah, so I mean, I can't give away my sources. I'll say that much, but for a couple of weeks, sort of been working on this one, and obviously we've known, haven't we, since the club went up for sale, that there was a story to tell there, and that FSG are sounding out potential offers and want to hear more from potential bidders. And this is just one of the, you know, well, I mentioned it in the piece, I suppose, that one of many parties that have sort of expressed an interest early, but one I think that sort of is particularly interesting because of the background in terms of the diplomatic ties, and also obviously the huge wealth of those two states sort of comes into it as a factor, even though these are described as private investors. I think when you hear Qatar and you hear Saudi Arabia, you think of big money. And I think that's no different with this offer. You know, you've got to sound a note of caution in terms of it is still early in the process. You know, this is not a done deal yet. And I think there's still some twists and turns to come and a lot of other interests and a lot of competition out there to get it. But yeah, as a starting point to have this potential bid, it's massive and could be a huge thing for Liverpool. Could really change things in terms of the ownership model as well.
The diplomatic stuff, I think, is really interesting. Would you mind just expanding that on that for people? Because obviously you make mention in the article about the relationships between Saudi Arabia and Qatar have been, to say it's like they've been frosty is like to really undersell it, to be perfectly honest. You know, it's been, there have been a number of issues over the years which seem to have resolved themselves. But would you mind just talking us through the sort of what that's all about?
Yeah, so around 2017, there was a complete end of diplomatic ties between Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and a few other nations in that part of the world were part of that as well. I believe Egypt and Bahrain as well completely cut ties with Qatar, and it was because there was a suggestion at the time that they had been sort of engaged in state-sponsored terrorism. They've been providing money to terrorist groups, Islamic terrorist groups, and quietly funding those groups. And that was the accusation that was leveled at them and sort of led to, a complete end of ties. And, the aftermath of that, there were it wasn't just sort of an end to trade and that general frostiness that was there, but it was also one of the things that people would have heard about in a sporting context was that being sport wasn't allowed to be broadcast in Saudi Arabia. And that was a big part of the sort of the argument that made it into the sporting sphere, I suppose. And then Saudi Arabia, suddenly there was this pirated version of beIN Sports that was available in the country, and Qatar believed that Saudi Arabian government had created that, and that was all part of it. But fortunately, sort of in the last couple of years, things have sort of started to calm down a little bit. I think sort of moving towards this World Cup has strengthened ties as well. I think that has sort of warmed things, is that knowing there was going to be a World Cup in the region, it was going to be in Qatar, I think it made sense to the Saudis to thaw those relations a little bit. And that process has started to happen. And we're back in a position now where you saw the leaders of the two countries sat together at a World Cup game. We've also... the beIN is now allowed to be broadcast in Saudi Arabia again, although there has been a little bit of an issue in this World Cup where an online platform run by beIN has been banned in Saudi. But I don't think that's a complete step back in relations. I think that's just a minor bump in the road. But yeah, relations are sort of back to normal now, and the two countries are getting on. And I think, there's a possibility that if this bid for Liverpool does sort of make it through, and that this is seen as a sort of a really good way of showing that those ties are strengthened. Because although these, like I say, are private investors, there's always strong links to the state. And I think it will be easy for either state to shut down a deal like this if they felt that they didn't want Qatar and Saudi Arabia to be seen together or to be seen linked up in any way on the global stage. And Liverpool certainly represents that.
I just want to just pick on a thread there, because this beIN Sport thing, that was one of the main things holding up the Saudi takeover of Newcastle, wasn't it?
Yeah. So that was a major part of it, and their inability to. I think, for all the talk about the worries about Newcastle being run by the Saudi state, I think the beIN Sport thing was actually arguably a bigger issue, in the sense that the Premier League knew that the Premier League football couldn't be legally broadcast in that country with the situation with Qatar the way it was. And then suddenly that situation resolved itself and things changed. And then the Newcastle takeover went through, and suddenly the Premier League were convinced that the Saudi Public Investment Fund, which is quite clearly state run, wouldn't have state involvement in Newcastle. It was a bit funny the way that resolved itself. And I think it said a lot more about the influence of the beIN Sports situation rather than concerns over who was running Newcastle at the time. But that situation, like I say, has resolved itself. And now the two countries are moving forward with normalised relations.
Yeah, and obviously in terms of, you've mentioned it a couple of times already, the sort of the state links within these things. I mean, I think that's where a deep lack of understanding kind of comes from, your average football fan. And look, and I count myself in that, to be perfectly honest. I'm no geopolitical expert when it comes to how states are run and how they spend their money. But when we talk about private investment funds, when we talk about it in this country, for example, it does tend to mean just that. It tends to mean private enterprise, but it does seem to mean something slightly different when it comes to states like Qatar and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, they're just more generally more sort of intertwined with the state, and that's the way it goes. I think the main difference sort of points out is, and we don't know the full details, and I will admit that the full details aren't exactly clear to me in terms of who exactly these groups are, because that is the way that these stories come out. This is the way it works. The people I speak to are very close to the situation, but they're, it's not a situation where either party wants to sort of come out and announce who they are yet. I think a lot of that, by the way, is down to the fact that, billionaires don't tend to want to be seen to fail in these sort of situations. They don't want to see, attach themselves to bidding for a football club and then coming out and beIN beaten in that process and everyone knowing who they are. So I think, you're not going to get exact clarity about who is involved in it at the moment. But you would suggest that because of where the two groups of investors come from, that there will be some sort of ties to the state. I think that there are varying degrees of it as well. The Saudi Public Investment Fund for example, is, you know, at Newcastle is quite clearly just a government vehicle for investing and spreading the Saudi name and making money, of course. So I think that, you know, it is possible to have something that's completely different to that. But we will just have to see. And that, you know, that will only come out of the shakeup, really, in terms of whether this bid does go further down the line.
You'd imagine there'd have to be a lot more separation, I guess, if there's a, you know, because if you've already got Saudi owners within the Premier League with, because there'd have to be, I guess, almost like, you know, to use a bit of a daft analogy, but kind of when you're on your driving test and you have to make it very, very clear that you're looking at your mirrors and you're looking, they would have to go to extreme lengths, I guess, probably more so to show that there is a real separation, that the football clubs wouldn't be owned by the same group of people.
Yeah, exactly, because of the issues that causes in terms of, you don't want two clubs being owned by the same people in the same league because of the questions that throws up about the competitiveness and whether one club would you know, let the other go for a certain player or anything like that. We don't want that situation. So, you know, the conversations I've had is that there's a confidence within that particular bid that it would withstand scrutiny. You know, the identity of the bidders and the whole package as a whole, they believe that, you know, particularly given the way that Newcastle went through, that they think that this bid would, you know, would withstand that scrutiny, that would get passed by the FA.
Yeah, the ownership issues around Liverpool Football Club, and are they buying, are they selling, is it partial investment, all that stuff is going to run and run and run. But anytime there's any updates, we'll have you covered at Redmen. Right then, moving away from current affairs at Liverpool, let's take a little trip back in time. Earlier this week, Dave Kirby, author, came in. He wrote the book, Those Were the Days, My Friend, focusing on Liverpool's, the culture and what it was like being a Liverpool fan in the early 70s. So yeah, check out a clip from this interview. This is Dave Kirby's Liverpool Library.
What was the sort of instigating factor for this? Because, you know, you've been sat on that story for a long time. It could have come out at any point, I guess.
Yeah, it was in the Jordan lockdown when we played West Brom and Alisson scored that header. I was in the boozer in Kirby, where I usually go, and it was rammed and we were all in there watching it. And I can imagine the celebration.
2 metres apart, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of my nunk shirt and shirt and all that. but anyway, it was bouncing in there and all after it. We were on all, everyone was singing the songs and that. And it was these two young kids. I've seen them before, Jay and Lewis, good lads and all, young Reds. They're only about like 19, 20. And they started singing a Bertie Me. Bertie Me, said to Bill Shankly. So anyway, I asked them, did they know, you know, the origins of the song and all that? And I said, do you know who Bertie Mee was? And Jay said, was he Bill Shankly's mate? He thought he was Bill Shankly's mate. So I started laughing and I sell him the origins of the song, because like that, originally that was a proper boot boy song. You know, what we used to do, you know, we used to sing that. And at the end, you go, nah, 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 and do the boot walk into the away fans, you know, mainly in the Anfield Road, you get behind the away fans. Into the boot walk into them, which is like probably the Torres bounce. Yeah. As, you know, that's how you'd remember it. So I was explaining all this, and they were fascinated and that, you know, so I was telling them a few more stories from the early 70s and that. And, you know, and I realised then that, you know, how sort of relevant these stories are, because, you know, we're not getting any younger, or my generation, and like, once we're all gone, they're gone forever. So that was like the initial spark for the book, I thought. So, and then obviously the 74 Cup journey. Yeah, there were so many characters and a good few mates of mine, someone who no longer here. So I thought I needed sort of like a timeline to do it. I didn't just want to pick sporadic games.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a story and beginning, middle, end. So, you know, that's where I started, because it took me old scarf from 74 to Wembley when we played Chelsea. And, you know, there's a lot of memories when as you get older, watching Liverpool FC, you know, and you lose people and all that, it gets more emotional and spiritual and everything. So I sucked my scarf to Wembley and I just sat outside Wembley remembering this particular journey. So I wanted to document that journey, but, you know, there's little offsprings off it, you know, describing other things that were going on around that time. So it was mainly like a generation thing, you know. I realised, as I say, how much the old stories are important.
You've got the scarf?
Yeah, I've still got the scarf.
Do you want to get it? Because it's mad, because this is the one, I think... Everyone, you said, like, you say a Liverpool scarf. Everyone's got a vision in their head of what a Liverpool scarf is. And, like, this is so far, much an artifact before my time.
Yeah, yeah.
That, like, they literally don't make them like that anymore.
No. That was, And what it was as well, you know, it was totally tribal around that time. There was trouble everywhere we went. So you can see the retailers were cashing in on it, you know, Scouse Power, and you can see the fists at the end, like that, with, you know, cop rule, okay. You know what I mean? So that was like a, to have a silky then was it was a thing. And to rob a silky off an away fan, you know, that was like a, or a scarf off an away fan. That was a big thing back then.
It's and that's the thing that really strikes me about it, and what I think is so fascinating, because it's such a sort of period piece.
Like
Tony Evans has done some great stuff on the 80s, and yourself and Nicky Alt have really done a good job of capturing various slices of like sort of Liverpool history or whatever from that sort of fan experience. But I've never really seen or heard that much from the 70s at all. So it was interesting because you kind of talk about it and you're like, you talk about the fashion. It's not, like you said to me, it's not heavy on the fashion. It's not like, it's not too heavy in any of the stuff really. But it's, when I think of like Liverpool lads going away and going to games, in my head it's all sambas and trackies and all that. This is like the year before that. It's almost like a different Liverpool. This is before Liverpool were the all-conquering force in Europe.
Yeah,
it's almost a different Liverpool football club.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's why, you know, I've often said, you know, because I was there before the all the European success and all that, and this is the time before that. This is when we used to go on the specials and everyone wore Fleming's jeans, and there was only one shop in Walton, and everyone had Fleming's and Airwear boots. You know, that was the dress then, you know, the early 70s.
And just to clarify on Airwear, because I had to remind myself of this, and as soon as I read it, I went, oh my God, yeah, that's what we used to call them too as kids. But Doc Martens is Airwear. And again, it's just, yeah, because it's mad that the fashion being completely different to what would come 10 years on.
That's right, yeah, because like the Manx and all that, they used to call them Docs or GMs, but the Scouse word was Airwear. And we all had them, you know what I mean? And so that was there was no designer stuff them going on. And you had like maybe a Ben Sherman shirt with a pleat on the back and Fleming's jeans, but like all the samba and stuff and that happened around late 77, 78. So this is all pre that. And no one's ever done the boot boy book. This isn't a proper boot boy book, although I do really touch on some of the aggro that was going on. But I mean, the proper boot boy stuff, I know all the lads who, they're all about 70 now. And that book's never been done. You know, they're like from how it all started up to the samba days.
And just for people who wouldn't be familiar with the term, like the boot boys, what's that? Who's that refer to?
The boot boys is like the skinheads, you know, like they weren't shaving heads, but we all had long hair then. But the boot boys was just there, basically, like when you were watching Liverpool, you go with hundreds of lads, and you know, we'd all have the boots on, and you'd all be up for a fight because that's the way it was.
Yeah,
you know, it's simple. You know, I know really nice passive lads who got involved with it because you couldn't if you didn't. If you got, say, it's like 700 of us on a special. If you got offered at, say, Leeds and you moved away from that 700, you get absolutely booted to bits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like you all had to get stuck in. But the boot boys, yeah, it was like a word for like the trouble and the hooligans, really. But we, you know, I'd say, no, I've heard that hooligan thing and it sort of labels you. But like, as I say, I know good lads. My eldest brother, Amich, he used to get stuck in. He's a cracking fella. My youngest brother, he used to get stuck in. And then they're just, well, he's a teacher now. Do you know what I mean? So, like, at the end of the day, you know what I mean? Everyone has to have a go down. And when you get off, there was like an excitement about it, though, Paul, I must admit, for a young lad.
Well, you talk about the sort of culture around it, because I think that's what's really interesting, because it makes me really uncomfortable reading any of the hooligan kind of stuff, because raised in the post Hillsborough, you know, era where Scousers and all that so labelled. But what I think is interesting about it is you contextualise it, because you're talking about growing up basically without a pot to piss in, and you've got that culture of like danger and lads getting into scraps existed on the street in your day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
And so it was a natural thing almost for it to kind of carry on into the football from there.
Yeah, I've said that because I grew up in Kirby, and Kirby in the 70s, early 70s, there was gangs everywhere. You couldn't even go to the shop. I used to go for my dad's paper, and you know, you'd have to dodge little gangs and that in your own area. It was just, it was totally tribal, the whole city, and gangs everywhere. But at the match, you know, it was like a truce. You know, you'd all join together. It was a strange kind of thing. But But yeah, so I was that used to, like, they had mounted police in Kirby for a couple of months in 1974 to stop the gang fighting. There was that many in Kirby, so I was that used to, like, you know, gangs and fighting and stuff like that in my environment, that when you went to the match, it was just normal, you know, to me, you know, because I was sort of getting brought up in that culture.
Well, it's like the bubble, isn't it? You know, you're right, when you're surrounded by a bunch of lads and you're all into the same things, that's your world, isn't it? And that's the thing that got kind of mistaken or gets sneered at a little bit, because the people who make judgments of, and they still do it now for football fans, you know, in general, you must find it quite hilarious when you see football fans today being judged in the similar way that they were in the 70s and 80s, when it's night and day how football fans conduct themselves, I guess, of footy. But people don't, if you're not in it, it must be hard for people to appreciate how you end up in those situations.
Some fascinating insight there from Dave, and yeah, his book, Those Were The Days, my friend, is out now if you're looking to get yourself or someone else a gift to learn what it was like being a Liverpool supporter in the 70s, which, having read it and having listened to Dave, was a lot different than it is today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Right then, going back to current affairs. I'll give a little teaser about this earlier, but yeah, JNO Inside Time, me and Neil Jones talking about a certain Mr. Jude Bellingham and all the links around Liverpool and Jude and reports from Jamie and all that stuff. Yeah, me and Neil had a good old chat about hopefully a guy who might potentially, fingers crossed, be signing for Liverpool very, very soon. Check this out. We're going to talk about Jude Bellingham, because why wouldn't we be? To everyone wants on it. To be honest, it's the hot name, and there's been a lot of reports in the last 48 hours. So most of these are coming out of Germany, in fact, pretty much all of them. So we saw Christian Falk, obviously, from Sport Bild, say Liverpool are the favourites to sign Jude Bellingham from Bayern Munich next summer. They're more advanced.
Dortmund.
Liverpool are favourites to sign Jude Bellingham from at BVB, Dortmund, next summer. Talks are more advanced than with Real Madrid. The family of Bellingham prefers him to go to Liverpool. Moving on, he also says the management of Jude Bellingham have informed Real Madrid that Liverpool's actually leading the race for the transfer of Bellingham this summer. That's the starting point for this one. I think he also went and spoke to the lads at the Anfield Rap. We've done an interview with John Gibbons, our mates over there. And it basically, you know, his dad and his mum and his agents are all keen on getting him a move to Liverpool. And then there was reports this morning that Bellingham was pretty much going to go to Dortmund after the World Cup and say, yeah, I do want this move now. There's a lot of smoke now. Like, you talk about no smoke without fire. The smoke is bellowing out of all of Germany.
I'm blaming Jordan Henderson for all of this. I think with that the
celebration
and then obviously the reaction to it. I mean, fair play. I think he has to get a finder's fee, won't he? I think Jordan and Trent, they've been doing a pretty good man mark. And I think it's all very positive. That's the first thing to say. I don't think there's anything out of the Liverpool end at this moment, and understandably so. I mean, they're not going to go and sort of shouted from the rooftops. We've seen it happen in the past with other players where they've gone a bit early and it's cost them.
Financially and the player.
Yes, yeah. I think the positive stuff out of it all really is the fact that the family or the people around Jude Bellingham see Liverpool as the sort of the best option. I thought, I think it's been the thing that a lot of people have clung to, really, a little bit like Van Dijk, you know, that sort of Liverpool probably...
He's got his heart.
Probably shouldn't have got Van Dijk when they did. You know, they were probably down the list of the ideal clubs for him at that moment in time. You know, if he'd gone to City, you know, guaranteed sort of Premier League trophies and that kind of thing. But I think he was sort of sold on the story and the dream and the sort of history and the feel of the club, I think, and the manager. And the hope is that Bellingham's the same. You know, he's got his pick of whichever clubs he wants to go to. Let's be honest, if he turns around tomorrow and says, no, I want to go to Man City, no one would bat an eyelid and say, what are you doing? You know, that's up to him. If he'd done the same at Real Madrid, he could. The hope has always been that Liverpool's pitch is the most convincing, and then that they've got the money to execute it. Let's hope they have. I mean, it's going to be a huge price. We knew it was going to be a huge price, and it's going to be 100 million plus, clearly. It's only gone up with what he's done in the World Cup. I haven't personally seen the performances because I haven't watched any of the England games, but I can see the fuss around him. You can see what everyone's saying about him. You can see what very good judges of players are saying, that he's going to become one of the best midfielders in the world. I think I saw, was it Phil Foden? I think it was Phil Foden.
He said, I don't want to talk him up, but he's going to be the best player in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know if that isn't talking. Yeah, yeah. I'd like to hear no. Phil Foden's praise of somebody. Then. Yeah, I don't think I don't want to say too much, but oh my God.
Yeah. I've seen people tweeting that saying, like, I'm not getting carried away, but Jude Bellingham's like going to win the Ballon d'Or and Liverpool going to the Premier League. But he's obviously enhanced his reputation. He's 19 years of age, absolute star, already going to be even better. So the fingers crossed, it looks a lot more positive for Liverpool, I think. And I know it's tough reading into stuff, but you see Jordan Henderson with his forehead on him and then recreating it with Trent, and that's sort of there's clearly a bond emerged there, hasn't it, between, well, I don't know if it's an emerge, I think it was already there. I think there was a great clip of Jordan the Euros sort of fixing his tie and his collar with when he was doing the club the team suit.
There was a picture of Bellingham on the phone with Trent and Hendo
that's the celebration. In the tunnel, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, like, it just feels like, I don't know, Trent going on for a walk with him, wasn't it, down by the waterfront, and sort of everyone like reading into that. But they're not soft, these players. They know what's being said. And
well, especially if you post it on social, you know. If you go for a walk with your mate, that's one thing. Put it on the social, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, you would imagine that Bellingham would be in a position where he's, oh, mate, don't, like, you know, like, come on, I can't be bothered with this sort of furore around it, or even Trent and Jordan. But they obviously like it. They obviously enjoy it. And maybe that bodes well for the deal as well. They think, well, yeah, we're in here, you know. I hope so. I mean, I can't wait to see him in the Premier League full stop, but if he comes to Anfield and become a player for Liverpool, it really is one of those signings that just gets the pulse racing, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. He's an absolute superstar. I suppose the fact that these reports are coming from, you know, pretty highly reputable sources in Germany, so with all due respect to other sources we've used, and I'm not going to put names in anyone's mouths here, but we've spoken on here some stories and you're like, I'm not too sure about that one, but these are coming from Sky Germany and Bill. Like, these aren't just lads making shit up because they don't really need to, because they're reputable sources it is.
And it's not really saying, you know, it's not a shock news almost, is it? You know, I think it's been signposted from a while back that Liverpool are in the race. Obviously, the question has always been about the finances and a little bit. I always thought Real Madrid was the one that you sort of, with the worries, if you want to call it. Yeah. And you still are, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
City are in there, of course. I think Real Madrid are the ones that you sort of think, they're a little bit Liverpool, where they can, the sort of the white kit and the sort of the law and all that is huge for players.
Come and play with Camavinga, Tchouaméni, Valverde, and you become like the new
I definitely have. I've done the Bernabeu tour, and you walk around and look at the trophy cabinet and think, blimey, you know, like, you sort of, okay, that's a serious club, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's always been the worry, but I think it has always been sort of thought and known that Liverpool are really, really desperate and pushing and wanting to get it done. Hopefully the hard work and the groundwork comes to fruition.
It's where I'm always interested in, from, like, obviously a journalistic point of view, like, these stories, like, the fact that it's in Germany and it's two reputable sources, like, who's benefiting from this? Like, you know, like, there's always reason things come out. I always feel like there's always a reason why a story is leaked now. Like, is it, you know, say, the line that both of these outlets have used is, you know, Real Madrid have been informed that Liverpool are actually in the race. Is that a way for somebody trying to kick Real Madrid up the backside and say you want to get your act into gear, or because it, again, I'm always quite sceptical, and maybe I'm just a cynic in life, but like things very rarely come, there's always a justification behind something coming out, whether it's just someone likes having a chat and that's one thing, but flip side is, for now, when everyone knows the hype about Jude Bellingham and he's like the, you know, you talk about stars of the World Cup and he's one of them, with, you know, your Mbappes and Bellingham, they're all going to, all these lads, it feels like there's a reason why it's all coming out now, and I just wonder if it is a case of just like, again, I hope I'm wrong, but like, is it whipping up interest? Is it whipping up other teams to get your arse into gear, basically?
I don't think so. I mean, I can't imagine that anyone's been sitting on their hands with Bellingham, you know, in terms of, I think it's well known again, he's going to leave next summer. Liverpool clearly, I mean, Jürgen said it himself, didn't he? Couldn't get him the summer just gone. The only problem with the player is that he wasn't available in the summer. So, tells you that the question's been being asked for months by Liverpool. I'm sure the same goes for City, Chelsea, Manchester United, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain. I think there was a their chairman was on Sky, wasn't he?
Talking about how good he is. We're not going to buy anyone in January, but he's bossing.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah,
basically. Paraphrasing.
Yeah. So, I don't think anyone's been sitting on their hands in that regards, but I don't know. It is interesting to know where, like, sort of, is it Dortmund sort of just sort of preparing the ground that, look, you know, we can't.
Yeah,
we're getting ready.
We're getting ready
for the inevitable. You know,
so the fans, like, letting the fans know, kind of thing. In advance.
Yeah, possibly, you know, maybe there is a little bit of that, like, and also a little bit of the, you know, look, he wants to go to Liverpool. Like, sort of, it's not as bad as it might be, you know, he's not going to Bayern, so, like, you know, it's all right, he's going to Klopp, and he's going, you know, he wants, his family want it and all that, and the sort of, the narrative of, oh, he always wants to go back to the Premier League, you know, he's an English player, he wants to do that, so there's possibilities there, listen, stories come from absolutely everywhere, you know, you'd be amazed where a lot of times stories come from places you'd never even imagine in terms of a transfer or, something like that, so I'm not gonna don't need to speculate too much about where it might come from, but I do think that the sort of the reputable nature of the reporters or the reporting gives a lot of encouragement and hope to Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. You are right in saying you made a great point before, like, Liverpool are keeping their cards close to the chest because they have been burned before. You know, we referenced Virgil van Dijk jokingly, but literally that happened, and they literally had to put a statement on the website, apologise to Southampton. Step back, and they had to wait 5-6 months to get, and probably had to pay maybe a little bit more money than when they go into the. So this has happened before, so it does feel like I say, the general trend recently of transfers more often than not has been like it's been from the country where the player's based, and then because Liverpool are keeping things close, which is the right way to do it. By the way, I think that is how they should be doing it. I'm just fascinated now. Like, if it is next summer, that's a lot. It's early for a start. It's really early for this to be going on now. Like, I know we are just about to get through a transfer window, but it's the one that I'm almost certain Dortmund won't let Jude Bellingham go in January. I might be wrong, but I mean, as it stands, Dortmund are sixth in the Bundesliga, and they're only, 2 points off fourth Champions League football, so that, why would they sell one of their best players now?
And from Bellingham's point of view as well, I think he's got a lot of sort of respect for Dortmund. I don't see him sort of, cheers, I've had a good World Cup, cheers, lads. You know, I think he'd want to leave on a sort of a better terms.
Might want another shirt retiring.
No club has number 22. But yeah, I mean, exactly that. I don't think it would, but it's such a big deal. It's such a big sort of sign. And obviously Liverpool have got other issues going on at the moment that are bubbling away. It would be nice if they could sort of just tell us nice and early that they're getting this done. I think it would take a lot of heat out of a few conversations that are going on around the club at the moment, but I don't know. We'll see how it develops. But I'm sure we haven't heard the last of Jude Bellingham Liverpool. Hopefully, you know, we have heard the last of Jude Bellingham anywhere else.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Just to circle back on the point you made earlier, I want to put on it. You mentioned the most encouraging part for you was the fact that it's his family and his agent who are, like, how significant is that for a player, really? Because. And how much influence do you think that has on? I know he's only a young lad, but essentially he's a grown man. He can make his own decisions. But there must be a reason. Like, does that just show, like, maybe how well Liverpool have thought of elsewhere? Maybe Liverpool have gone about this process in, like, a quite classy manner. Because listen, I know transfers can be a bit cloak and daggers sometimes and a bit shady. But it feels like that when you say that's significant. Why do you say that?
Well, because there's a common perception that you go where the money is and you go where the trophies are, don't you? And I'm not saying that that's not where it is at Liverpool, but there seems to be a few clubs, and Liverpool are one, I think Barcelona are one, I think Manchester United are one, and Real Madrid, where there's something else as well. You have to be careful how you put it, but you can. It's a bit like the Klopp quote about pushing the train rather than jumping on the train when it's running. You know, it feels a little bit more like, no, you go to Liverpool because you want to be part of something. You want to.
You're not jumping on.
You want to be treated. You want to be treated different, or you want to feel a bit different. You know, listen. There's a famous slogan that gets with rival fans about this means more, and it's obviously just a marketing token, but there is an element of it with Liverpool where it feels like almost one league title compared to three of City is almost, it almost feels like it, you know, it means as much to these fans, or it means as much to the club, you know, just to be part of those. You see them European nights, you see the incredible sort of moments that the club's had down the years. I think it does resonate with certain players. Not everyone, you know. Some say, "Well, no, look, you might not qualify for the Champions League. You might be on the decline. Whatever. You've got players leaving. Mo Salah's in his 30s. Blah blah blah.
New owners.
Yeah. There might be. But if someone like Bellingham and his people, who are, from what I gather, are very very savvy and very smart, as we've seen by the fact that they could have gone to United when he was 16, they went to Dortmund because they felt like, no, it was a pathway, and they got a bit of a plan for the player. If someone like that are saying, no, we believe in this project, whatever it is, with Liverpool, it reflects well on the club, because there's a lot of uncertainty around the club at the moment with the ownership, with, you know, with people leaving key roles, with aging squad and gaps in the team and that kind of thing, performances. If someone like that is given, you know, a show of faith and saying, no, go ahead, yeah, we can go and win major honours. I can be the main man at Liverpool. I can pick them over Real Madrid and Man City. It's a really good reflection on the club, the way it's been run, and the manager.
Is there a piece of this, Neil, where, like, just because there's no footy on, like, it's easier for these conversations to be happening? Like, you know, it might happen, but like Dortmund, what else are Dortmund doing? They're not like worrying about, they haven't got a game, or Liverpool have got games to be playing. It feels like, well, why wouldn't you be having these conversations? So there'll be people around Europe now having conversations. I know that they happen all the time, but surely there might be a bit more clarity around it, where you're not pressed into doing five other different things as well, because like the lads have got a game and stuff. Yeah. Whether it's Jürgen or just someone getting on the phone or whatever it is.
Well, I mean, it's relatively straightforward. I know it's a very big deal, but it's relatively straightforward, isn't it? Look, Dortmund are pretty much resigned to sell, and what are they going to sell for? What's the price? Okay, can we afford it? Yeah, there we go. Right, the player wants this amount of money. Okay, does he want to play for us? And they're the questions that need answering. No, nothing else really. I don't think there's any real thing of, oh, where are we going to fit him in, or that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, he's going to go and play, and he's going to be one of our star men. So the question is, I suppose the complexity comes in is the financial side. Okay, what's the price, the end price that Dortmund are going to sell for? When are they willing to give us that? You know, Dortmund aren't soft. They would be stupid to have named their price in November or in October, because they knew that this World Cup was on the horizon. They knew that he was going to play for England. He was going to be part of the squad. There was a fair chance he was going to do something pretty good at the tournament, which he has. So the price is obviously going to be on the rise. So that's where the conversation comes, I think, after the World Cup, is when the player sort of says, look, yeah, last 6 months, you know, of my time at Dortmund, I want to go next summer. Dortmund say, right, you've done that at the World Cup, this is what we value you at, who's there, who's going to pay it? And if Liverpool are there, then I'm sure it'll move forward from there.
Yeah, to wrap this one up, then one final one for you, is this is where a lot of cynics, and we obviously, for every positive, there's always a cynic and stuff. I don't really want to end on a bad note, but I'm going to hopefully turn this into a positive. Is that they always, one is, yeah, but they've never paid that amount of money for, they're not going to do it again. My rebuttal has been, and hopefully you agree with me, you might not, is like, they wouldn't be doing, or they know the price. They're not idiots. Liverpool don't think they're getting Jude Bellingham for a bargain.
Yeah.
They know that they're going to have to, like, same with Virgil van Dijk, they knew it was going to cost though. And it cost probably a bit more because of some of the stuff they did, but it feels like it'd be just a complete waste of everyone's time to just go through all this process and like a year or whatever it's done to talk to people and get the grant, and then just not to pay the price. Yeah. Like, I understand that, again, the price might be changing because Dortmund have got every right to do that as well. But again, that's the... that's the positive for me, is that, like, I just don't think they'd be doing all this work that we're pretty certain they've done if it was just because they know how much it's going to cost anyway.
Yeah, and I also think that there would be some dampening from Liverpool if there was a doubt that they were going to...
You want me, James Pearson, to have a tweet out?
Yeah, yeah, well, oh yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there would, you know, it would be in Liverpool's interest almost to pour some cold water on it and sort of say, look, you know, we're not in for them at any price here. You know, like, we're not going to spend 150 million on a midfielder. You know, I had my doubts about the price because of the position he played. But to be honest, I mean, it feels a bit like, yeah, he's not a midfielder really. He's just a bit of every. He's like a sort of a just a.
He can score your goals.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, you know, he's a sort of, he's everything that you want him to be, really. You know, he can change a lot of aspects of your team. So maybe that's those doubts were you know, wrongly placed. I think so. Liverpool, it's been a while. I think I'm trying to think of a player that Liverpool have sort of we got used to it in the Rodgers era a little bit, where it was like we couldn't get that one done because of it was the price went too high or whatever. You know, think of Alex Teixeira, I think was one that I can think of. That was actually Klopp, wasn't it? But it's been a while, I think, since you've heard the story that Liverpool have sort of looked at a player and then gone, no, we're not paying that for him. You know, it tends to be quite, look, we identify the player and then we'll sort the price out. And you look at Nunes, Diaz, Jota, Thiago, Canate in recent seasons. You know, it's generally just got done. And Liverpool, you know, there was no sort of I don't recall Liverpool ever saying, "Oh, you know, we might go for someone else instead of Darwin Nunes." You know, like we're not just all in on Darwin. You know, it was almost like, "Yeah, we want Darwin Nunes." Right, there we go, and we've signed him within a week. Thiago was signposted a long time ago. I don't ever remember them being a sort of a backup plan to Thiago. You know, leaked into the media to sort of say, "Oh, don't get your hopes up on Thiago. Don't please don't think we're just signing him." And I think the fact that nothing at all is coming suggests, A, how sensitive and big the deal is, but I think also that there is a bit of confidence at Liverpool that it is going to happen, because I think Liverpool, certainly in the past, would have been in a position where they'd be saying, whoa, like, let's just calm this Bellingham train down, because we're going to look stupid if he ends up going to Real Madrid. Like, you know, we don't want to sort of make it look like, oh, wow. You know, I can remember, you know, I won't name any names, I remember the player was Willian. And I can remember Liverpool sort of really thinking they were getting Willian, and then sort of it becoming a little bit when he obviously went to go to Tottenham first, then he ended up going to Chelsea. And there was a little bit of like a, well, where's all this excitement about Willian come from? You know, we were never in for Willian. He's like, yes, you were, and you just felt you looked a bit stupid because he did pick somewhere else. I don't see that happening as often. Certainly, you know, I can't recall too many examples, to be honest, of it recently. Obviously, we know that Tchouaméni was one that they fancied last summer. And it's interesting, isn't it, to wonder whether would they have had both? Would they have tried to sign Bellingham as well as Tchouaméni, as Real Madrid potentially are doing? That is an interesting point. I think he looks another star, doesn't he? You know, just a really stylish player as well, isn't he? Really, really good to watch. But there was never, again, it was, that didn't ever feel like it was about price. That felt like it was about him going to Real Madrid. And I think he said it himself.
It might be the reverse Bellingham, where it doesn't matter. I just want to play for him. I've got my heart on Real Madrid.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, again, just to fit, I mean, let's finish on the positive. I do think, I'm not saying it's a sort of a vital thing, but I do think it's significant enough. I do think Liverpool would have at least tried to sort of temper, because they know what's going on. They know what the players are doing with the pitches. You know,
yeah, might be encouraging it.
You can imagine a press officer or something, or you know, one of the sporting directors saying, oh, "Jordan, please, mate. Like, you know, you're making my
just go for a walk. Yeah, so yeah. Off Insta.
Go with someone else." But you'd hope so. Anyway, I think the overriding feeling on Bellingham at the moment is a lot more encouraging in recent weeks or recent days.
There you have it, some hot Jude Bellingham transfer talk. I'm sure that's what you were all looking for. Maybe that's what you searched for to find this podcast. Well, if you want to listen to any of the shows that you've just heard clips from, very, very simple. If you head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up today, All those shows are available as podcasts. They're also available as videos if you want to watch them on the website. But yeah, if you're just a podcast listener and you want to get those shows in your ears, directly into your native podcasting app, we can provide that service for you too over at redmenplus.com. If you're listening to this very show on Spotify and you just want to listen to all your podcasts on Spotify, that is brilliant, good for you. You can do that as well. If you search for Red Men Plus podcasts on Spotify, you can find us on there and you can pay them directly. You can, don't have to come through us, don't have to go to the website, you can pay Spotify directly, and just like everyone else gets, you'll get the podcast directly into your Spotify feed. So yeah, you've got redmenplus.com or you've got Red Men Plus podcasts on Spotify. Either way, we have got you covered. Come back next week for another Red Men Weekly. See you later, everyone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.